Okay.
I think that when I see a lot of musicians that they're a little older than me and they look really burnt out and just kind of becomes like a day job for them.
Like this guy. okay, fine. I'm a little burnt out.
I think I see it, and it's a lot of the time it's, I played Wonderwall last night. I played Wonderwall tonight. I'm going to play Wonderwall tomorrow night.
Welcome to hell.
Hello, I'm Ty Mayers. Tell me a secret, tell me a lie. Tell me anything to keep me here tonight. Tell me you love me. Tell me you care. Tell me all we are is tired and unprepared. 'Cause I'm lost and you found your way to my heart. And I don't know which way to go. Oh, but tell me what I'm supposed to do when I keep falling over you, but I can't get up, I can't get up. I know all this compromise keeping me so indecisive. I can't stop. Oh yeah, gotta run from this. Your fingers, so open your eyes, and it's on yours. But then you run while you leaping. It's always a smoky me was game, but in the end, oh, you're lost, and you found your way to my heart, and I don't. Way to go. Ooh, but tell me what I'm supposed to do when I keep falling over you, but I can't get up, I can't get up. I know all this damn confusion keeping me so disillusioned. I can't stop. Oh yeah, you gotta run from this. It's not what I say, 'cause I'm running away just to end up where I started.
Hello and welcome to the Jersey Shore Musicians Podcast. I'm Matt. That's Jeff.
Hello.
And tonight we got Ty Mayers.
Oh, what's golf up, club. Guys?
Golf clap.
Golf clap.
How are we doing tonight?
Doing good. Doing good.
Any problems
getting to the place?
Well, I think I've been over here before, and I remember missing that turn last time.
So and you missed it again?
You see that no U-turn sign, and you're like, maybe.
I better turn before that.
It's one of those, you know, the one time you did it is the one time that someone was watching.
That's it. That's right. So how's it going, man? You gearing up for some summertime gigs, I see.
Yeah. I got a busy, busy, busy summer.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's an interesting dynamic when you're working, but it's also the thing that you love. And I think that some people kind of try to stay away from that. For me, I'm like head in because I'm like, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So
you ever get like frustrated and bored of it?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the goal is you have to keep finding new things to do and keep entertaining your brain.
Okay.
I think that when I see a lot of musicians that they're a little older than me and they look really burnt out and just kind of becomes like a day job for them.
Like this guy? okay, fine. I'm a little burnt out.
I think I see it, and it's a lot of the time it's, I played Wonderwall last night. I played Wonderwall tonight. I'm going to play Wonderwall tomorrow night. And so I think that I've done a good job of like, I do the solo thing and then I have my own band and then I play with the Grateful Dead band and like always trying to find something new, somewhere new, someone new to play with, like just to keep your brain going so you don't fizzle out. And vacations. Lots of vacations.
Oh, vacations.
What are those?
I know. I was going to say.
Yeah, right?
Fuck. I can't complain that much. I get to work on amplifiers all day.
So my wife goes to Disney to run all the time. That's my vacation. I sit at home by myself.
I think in the world we need more dance competitions.
No. I've done my time. Done my time.
No, there you go. Go away.
So I pass the torch to you.
I know, thanks, dude. So what are we working on original music wise? Like we got some stuff in the works.
Yeah, we got we did a couple live sessions at a studio they called the Lampshade Sessions. And we dropped the audio, we dropped the first music video for those, and I think one of them was a song called Run From This that I released a long time ago, but it's just another version of it acoustic. And then got a new single coming out probably in the summertime. It's actually being mixed right now in the next couple of days.
Okay.
Very, very excited for the song. Oh, nice. I recorded this song 3 times and I didn't like it.
Really?
Yeah. So this time I got hooked up with a guy by the name of Zach Jones, insane drummer, great producer. He actually is the current sitting drummer for Sting.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So we went in and it was just me and my bass player, Matt, and him, and we put together this track. And I mean, 6 takes in and we had it, and I was nice. Blown away. Yeah. So
well, sometimes you need to like wait on a song and you know it comes out the right way when it wants to come out.
Yeah. Especially as, like when you write stuff, you want it to be as good as it can be. And it's like, you only get that one shot most of the time.
Yeah.
Like I've done remixes of stuff, but like, especially that song, I was like, I'm not going to get another one of these. I want this to be exactly what I want it to be, or I don't want it to happen at all.
And okay.
I think it's finally, we figured out the combination to making it, you know, something worth listening to.
Okay.
So back to what you were talking about before, I think the guys that you talk about that are burnt out are those guys that play covers and only play covers, where you can you still keep your original music on the forefront. Mm-hmm. And you're still very, very passionate about it.
Yes. I mean, and I wouldn't blame it on 100%. I think that the word cover, there's so many avenues for that.
Yeah.
So one of the, I always get the person that requests, play what you like playing. I don't play it if I don't like playing it. Mm. If I don't like the song, I don't care if it's the song that everybody plays. Yes, I could probably play it if I wanted to, but I don't. And so every song that I play, I love that song. Like we were talking about earlier, talking about Bruce Springsteen. I never heard of Bruce Springsteen. And all I knew was Santa Claus is coming to town at the beginning of the thing. And Santa's going to get you a new saxophone, that whole crap. I knew nothing else about Bruce Springsteen. And I heard my buddy Jimmy Brogan do I'm on Fire by Bruce Springsteen. I was like, whoa, love that song. Learn that song. I play that song almost every show and it has not gotten old. I can play it. I can change the way I play it. I love that song. I love Don't Think Twice, It's All Right by Bob Dylan. I could play that song every night. Stop This Train by John Mayer. Play it every night, you know. But there's songs that I love. And if you know enough of them, you don't find yourself doing the same exact set over and over again. And it's a solo gig. The only person that has to know the song is me. I don't have to go, well, does my other guy know? No, I know it. I can hear it on the radio that day and be like, oh, I can do that one tonight. And it keeps it fresh every night. And you try not to repeat yourself. And that way you're not like, all right, here we go, Wonderwall again. You know, sorry, I'm picking
on a lot of those guys that you say are burned out. They're the cover bands that play. They have their, you know, X amount of songs, and like,
yes,
they'll swap in maybe five or six different ones every time they play. But for the majority of it, they're playing the same songs, the same sets over and over.
I think
you
get addicted to the high of making people happy, but then you don't realize that there's other ways to make people happy. You don't have to, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I remember when I first played like an open mic, I was a little better than most of the people playing the open mic. And so everyone was like, oh my God. And they're clapping and they're into it. The next week, no one really cared that much. They were like, we get it. You're cool. Whatever. So then I played, I don't remember. I played like a Smash Mouth song or something and they freaked out. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So if I play that song, it activates this feeling from them. But then you get tired of playing that song. So you're like, how else can I get that feeling while doing the thing that I want to do? And basically it's just be good. Because if you're good, people love it anyway, you know? But if you're not so good, you kind of have to rely on those songs.
The fan favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, well, I can't really sing well, but I can play Sweet Home Alabama and people will sing it with me and get excited, which it's all about intention. If that's what you're chasing, awesome. No, like no insulting there, but I couldn't do it. I would be done at this point.
You would have tapped out by now.
I would probably still do it because it's just too easy of a job, but I think I would probably drink way more than I already do and hate it way more than I would.
God, that sounds familiar.
He'd be old and grumpy like you.
Ah, well, hey, man. There's still time.
He'll get there. He'll get there. Give it time. Give it time.
So, all right. You got stuff come out. Do you have other things that are out that people can find on you know, social media or streaming services?
I've got a Spotify, Apple Music. I've had maybe four or five singles out so far. So I'm trying to get my band out a little bit more this year. It's a little hard. My guys are really good, and they're all doing other stuff that gets in the way of...
That's the problem with people that are good. They're always involved in like five other things.
I know. And it's not even music things. Like my bass player, Matt Hillblum, is an amazing bass player, but he's also an amazing sound technician. He works out at the Hard Rock. And that schedule is a pain in the ass to work around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I imagine.
And I've tried, I think there's points where he's like, buddy, you can always find a fill-in. And then we try the fill-in, and I'm like, doesn't work, man. Yeah. You know, so... This year we picked some dates, and we also don't want to get into bar band territory. Okay. So we're kind of sticking to bigger shows and then only spots that we know.
Well, you're being selective. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to do four times a month playing the same places.
Yeah. You oversaturate it.
Yeah. And then you kind of lose what you were going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you space it out, it has a little more appeal when you do play.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more like, cause the goal for us would be festivals and stuff like that. So Press Kit and all the, going more in that direction than, oh, we can play, you know, so-and-so bar on LBI every week because we don't really need that. I can do that by myself and pay the bills.
You do that by yourself.
Yeah. It's way easier. It's a lot less setup and a lot less money to deal with. But
True. So, all right. So you have stuff out. You have things coming out now. Are they all single-based? Is it EP or...
We did the Lampshade Sessions just because they were both live. So that was two songs, Burnin' and Run From This. I cannot in good conscience put out any kind of EP or record. Okay. As much as I am an album listener, I love albums more. I hate when, I'm a big Maroon 5 fan, and I remember when Sugar came out, and someone's like, oh, did you hear this new Maroon 5 song? I'm like, yeah, I heard it 3 months ago when the record came out. It was on the record, but nobody listened to the record because we don't listen to it until they tell us, well, this is the single. This is the one you're supposed to listen to. So I would love to be doing that, but I think that when you're... not Taylor Swift, the money and time it takes to record something really well, to throw all of those things at the wall and hope that one of them sticks, that means you have, you know, seven blanks that you fired. And you're like, I could have shot that out and made it the center of attention 3 months later.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that with a lot of my buddies that are, you know, kind of doing what I'm doing, where they're like, well, why would I do that when I can just do a whole record's worth of music and pop them out, you know, one at a time over 3 months.
Well, we've noticed too that like, just being almost like the cyclical nature of it is it's reverted back to like the 50s and 60s where the album is not the way to go. It is, everything is singles based right now.
Our attention span is getting just as short as it probably was back then. I think it's hard though, because then people do come out with really good records and there's definitely an audience for it.
But mostly musicians.
Yes. I mean, musicians, audiophiles. I think that there's a whole scene of listeners. I went to Boston and saw Gregory Alan Isakoff. He's an amazing like folk singer. Dead silent in this room. Everyone knew every song. And they listened to his new record, every single song. And that was, I mean, thousands of people all, you know, because people have seen the older folks or more of the album. I'm like, no, these are all people my age. And they're there. They're just not, you know, they're not in the mainstream, which is fine. I'm totally okay with that. Yeah. But it's
just no money in the non-mainstream. It's hard. I shouldn't say there's no. There's always a way to make money in music. You got to find it. It's just you're not getting that. We'll just call it like Foo Fighters money, you know, where it's just like
Well, I think it everything comes back to me, and now with music, with business, what is your intention? What do you want? And I guess if your goal is to make money and be rich, you know, I want it all. I want to be like Taylor Swift or Dave Matthews or whatever.
Not many are like Taylor Swift.
No. So if that's your goal, like, unless you're, I mean, go ahead, throw your darts at the board, but like, that's very hard, and your product has to be solid, and you have to know the right people, and there's so many things. If your goal is to comfortably make a living whilst playing music, it is attainable. I think that I'm doing probably the lowest end of it, which I always tell people when they're like, you know, what's your plan B or whatever? I'm like, the coolest thing about my job is if I fail, I get to play music every night for the rest of my life. If I absolutely fail in anything else that I'm trying to accomplish, I can still go play music for a living. And that's my job. I don't have to go back to a grocery store or, you know, wait tables. This is what I get to do if I fail. But I think that going into the jam scene, I look at these bands like J-Rad and Cosmic Country, and they're not Grateful Dead, but they're jam bands. And these guys are nationally touring and they're playing huge venues. Goose is selling out the freaking Stone Pony, like outside. And they're not a mainstream Taylor Swift band, but there's no way that they're like, you know, starving musicians.
Yeah, but they're probably still not making crazy money.
Not crazy money, but they're getting to do what they want to do. Time versus money. And if it means you get to spend your time doing the thing you love, then maybe it's worth not making the money.
Yeah, just in the streaming age, but even national touring acts, they don't make that much money anymore.
No.
They really don't.
Which is funny because most of the money now is coming from the tour. It's not coming from the record sales.
Yeah. But most of it's coming off of your merch and your ticket sales, not your music.
Yeah, because you're not selling, you can't sell records. No one, unless you're buying vinyl, which even then, there's no way that that's even as much as CDs were back then.
Yeah. And I so many people are like, oh, you know, we're going to make a run of vinyl or this, that. I'm just like, I mean, that's cool, but most of the people now, it's like, well, I'm going to play this vinyl record USB'd into my computer.
Yep.
And it's still digital, so I think you're still missing the mark.
Yeah, I think it's the aesthetic, though. Like, I had a couple friends recently that dropped vinyl, and they give you that look when they're telling you about it. Like, I just wanted to have a vinyl. I thought it'd be cool. You know, it wasn't
it's more nostalgic.
And it's cool. Like, I'm not a hardcore audiophile, but I love collecting records, and I love sitting on my couch, pouring myself a whiskey, and just listening to records, you know? Yeah. And there is certain music that really works for that. I don't think that, like, I don't know, I have Kendrick Lamar records. I'm like, this sounds just like listening to it on my phone, but it's cool to put it on. And people love collecting that kind of stuff. I'm a merch hound. When I'm at a concert, I buy like everything. So I have t-shirts for bands that I would probably never see again.
So do I, actually.
It's bad, man.
That's a musician thing.
It is. It's, I don't know. I've always been I just like things. I always like things.
I don't like
money. I like things. I like the things you can buy with money, you know?
Yeah. What kind of merch do you have for when you're doing your stuff? And not like just a normal whatever bar or whatever. Like, you guys go do like a nicer show or something.
We have t-shirts.
Okay.
I want to do more. So the band, I've decided to... The goal would be for the band to just be Time Airs, right? You know, you go see whatever solo act. The band is just part of them. The problem is most people know Time Airs as a solo act with an acoustic guitar. So I was like, how can I create this different thing without being the Time Airs band or the Time... You know, there's so many.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I'm so tired of it. And we tried Time Airs.
But it does work.
It works, but it's kind of, I don't know, especially around here, there's basically any solo act that put together a band at some point now has their band, and it's that, you know?
Yeah,
and I was like, how can I get away from that? And at first it was Time Airs Trio because we were running as a trio. And then we added a fourth. So we were doing Time Eras Quartet. And I was like, I still think that's a little weird. It's kind of jazzy. And then I can't remember who came up with it, but Time Eras and the Metaphorical came up because we're kind of trying to push into the jam scene. And I was like, that's cool. That's a cool idea. And so my thought now would be merch-wise to push into the Metaphorical side and get some like trippy, you know, designs and stuff. And that way, when you see Time Eras, you're like, oh, that's Ty with a guitar. And then you see Time Eras in the Metaphorical, you're like, oh, that's the band.
Trying to differentiate.
It separates them, yeah.
Yeah, because I would hate for someone to not go to a show because they thought it was just me standing in the corner of a bar, you know. They're like, we could see him down the street tomorrow, But
it's funny how like we all say stuff like that where it's just like, oh yeah, well, yeah, I could go see that
free
at
that's
a bar.
That's the biggest negative, I think, to the working musician that's trying to be, you know, a singer-songwriter is I remember, I think it was Lizzie Rose. I was supposed to open for someone at Lizzie Rose Music Room down in Tuckerton, and the guy got sick and he was like, oh, you'll just do the show. And I'm talking to the owner and he's like, you both know we can't do that, right? And I'm like, I know, because who the hell is going to pay $20 to see me when they can go down the street the next day and see me play for free?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's different with the band because that's a different kind of thing, but like it's the price you pay for, you know, being a paid musician. Otherwise I'm just working a day job and then playing a show every, you know, 2 months or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, it definitely puts a little kink in the,
it does,
the hose.
But if you can keep the lines close, because that's, I think, the problem is, I can't remember who I was talking to. I have all these conversations with people. I don't know who it, I see their face. And I'm like, I don't know who it was. They're like, this is the covers. This is the original. And I'm like, why can't we put those lines a little closer? Let's keep the covers to the kind of music that you're writing. Let's keep the covers to the level of musicianship that you want. Because that's the thing for me, too, as a player. Like, I get bored very easily as a guitar player. So I need, that's why I love John Mayer. I love Dave Matthews. I love the Grateful Dead because they're fun to play and I can play Satellite all night long and it's fun.
See, but the problem is when you start to blur those lines, a lot of people that are going out to see you for your, like your solo act where you play covers, they don't necessarily want to hear original music.
I agree.
So it's,
but if
it's
you,
a fine line.
If you develop, I mean, we just did Waterview Music in Barnegat. We did this like ticketed event and it was me and a couple other acts. And I mean, my ticket sold out in like 2-3 days. And it, granted, it wasn't a huge room, but I developed a fan base that they don't really care what I'm playing. They just, they're there for me. They want to follow what I'm doing.
Well, yeah, it's good. But
and that's
for the
goal.
The majority of most people around here, especially Long Beach Island area, they don't care. No one cares for original music that much anymore.
Yeah,
it's anywhere in the scene around here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where you have to make them. It's annoying, but it's you're the product. Like I went to we did the thing at Mana Frickin', and I'm looking around and I'm like, you could have brought the six of us or however many there were, and not given us guitars, and all those people would have showed up because they want to hang out with all these people that they see, you know. Yeah. Chris Fritz, I always make that joke. I'm like, they could hire Chris Fritz to go sit at Old Causeway for 3 hours. And people would come out and hang out, and because they just love that idea of like, oh, I know that guy. That's my guy. Especially the tourists, because I mean, I'm not kidding when I get messages that are like, hey, we're gonna be on LBI this week. Where are you playing? We're gonna go. Blah 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 blah. We've seen you this many times, you know, and they're in love with you. And that's where you're like, okay, if you're in love with me, then you're in love with this part because this is me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that way it's not like, oh yeah, that one guy that plays Sweet Caroline every time we're there, you know. And it's a hard thing because now you're not. And it's the same thing in the mainstream industry. I think it's like the product is now a backseat to the person making the product. Like, keep bringing up Taylor Swift. It's like, that's her whole thing. She's just like, I'm the product.
Yeah.
You know, like, my records sell because you like me and what I do. Where I think that if you got like a James Taylor record or something, you're like, I like his music. It's not because I'm wondering who he's dating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true. That is, that's a
story. Which, again, you have to play with the toys you're given. So for
and
us,
she takes over professional sports too.
Yeah.
Not only do I sing and sell you everything, now you're gonna watch football because of me. Gotta love it.
I didn't see. I'm a fan of Taylor Swift. I think her last album was terrible, but I really liked a lot of her stuff. And then it started getting to the point where I was like, oh, you can just basically do whatever you want.
Yeah.
She could come out with a hip hop album tomorrow, and everyone would be like, yes. Tay-Tay did it. She did it.
She did it.
And if you don't like that, then you're a bad person.
That's my daughter. She's like, this album's so great because they stole her music and she just rewrote it and took it back.
Did you get a chance to listen to that, the new versions? So we AB'd them. We were on our way to another concert and my buddy and I AB'd the 1989. And I was like, oh, so it's basically like if you took Taylor Swift's 1989 record, which is a great record, and got rid of the millions of dollars of producers and smart musicians that worked on it. It just sounds like from a mix perspective, like I mixed it. Instead of like, yeah, like too much reverb on the vocals, kick drums are all over the place. Like, sure. It's like if she was like, let's take away all the things that made this record really, really good and just throw those in the trash because now it's mine.
I'm dead serious. Right? Because I thought, what, that first record she didn't own, she doesn't own it or something.
She still
like
doesn't
that.
Own it. That's why she re-released it so she can own the masters on it. And she tells all her fans, only take the new masters. Yep. So
and they're not as good. They're so not
they,
as good
they
at
don't
all.
Make the money I do.
Because
she just doesn't have enough money.
Oh, fuck.
And you know what? I'm all for having owning your own music. I totally understand that there was a compromise and a compromise and a compromise, and now you have the power to bring it back.
Yeah.
But it's like, just re-release the masters and say that they were that. Don't make them worse and then go here.
Or not to mention, she has so much fucking money. Just be like, look, what's it going to take for me to buy my masters?
Yeah. They might not let it, though, because that's worth more than her buying
it. But then, or just, I mean, as a songwriter, it's like, I think that when you write your music, especially when it's accepted on that level, it's not yours anymore. That doesn't belong to you. That's your audience's music. So now go write more and go, these are mine now.
Yeah.
You know, Prince kind of did that where he was under a label and then he was like, okay, these songs are whatever, the label can do whatever they want with them, but this is me now and they're mine. And it's like, if you're a writer and you're constantly writing, it's like, why are we still worried about old stuff, you know?
I read somewhere that he has like 8 to 10 full albums mixed, produced, and everything in a vault. Just
of course he does,
sitting there.
Of course he does.
And in his will, it's like, I think it's like, you know, after this many years after I die, you can release this one, and then you can release this one, and it's all like mapped out.
That dude's
somebody else did that, and I think the engineer has like literally written instructions that year 2020 something. Fuck, I can't think of it.
Because Bowie did some kind
maybe
of like
it was
that.
Bowie.
But it wasn't, I don't know if it was like planned with Bowie. I think it was just what he was working on before he did.
No,
away.
I think if it's, I could be wrong. I mean, I don't think it was Petty.
Prince strikes me as the person that's like, oh, I was ready to go. Like,
apparently maybe. All these albums have been done for years.
He isn't
just sitting there waiting.
Well, yeah, he did. Wrote. That's all
he did. That's all he did, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that must be nice. It's so funny that people didn't, like, I remember my dad. Because I didn't really listen to Prince much as a kid. And my dad was like, the Batman, what was it, Batman Returns soundtrack. He's like, that is the best thing that Prince has ever written. It's amazing. And I remember listening to that. And I was like, that is so cool. And then he passes away and everyone's like, Prince, he was the best. I'm like, none of you even know. Yeah, yeah. People that know already knew.
Yeah.
Like,
they didn't give a fuck then.
Again, obsessed with the person, obsessed with the social media gives us the attention. I remember when B.B. King passed away. And John Mayer was my way in, and through John Mayer, I found B.B. King and Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan. And so when B.B. King passed away, I was kind of sad. I was like, man, and especially the way it happened. And I saw some chick from my college, like, B.B. King, you'll be missed. And I'm like, you don't even know who B.B. and again, be sad, please. But no one gives a shit about what you're saying on Instagram. Like,
that's
you
like
just
every
look
February,
like an asshole.
They're like, that's the best halftime show ever. I'm like, whoa. The best halftime show ever belongs to Prince, and it will probably never be topped.
And they even
ever.
Show that. I've seen that every Super Bowl. It's always like, oh, well, here's another
dog
show.
That's the last
here's
Super
Prince.
Bowl that
He's
got played
best.
With live instrumentation.
Yeah.
I mean,
was even Michael couldn't
one?
Beat
the
him.
The last one, yeah, because all the rain, they said after that, we're not dealing with that anymore.
Okay.
Which really sucks.
Because they said there was multiple times he was walking around on stage and got electrocuted.
Well, and I was trying to tell my girlfriend that the other day, because she was talking about, she was making fun of, because Rihanna was lip syncing. And I told her, I was like, I get it. I do. I think it's bad. I don't like it. But from a technical perspective, you have to understand how many things are moving at one time. Yeah. And they only have one shot. So it's like, if I could pre-record all this shit. And again,
just sing it.
Nowadays, I think it's sad because the integrity of the musician is more in question than it used to be.
Of course.
Because you watch these guys and you're like, that could be completely fake. He might not even be able to play that part.
When Bruno Mars was on the halftime show, the only thing that was live was his vocals.
That doesn't shock me. But Bruno's band could definitely do that.
True.
But when I look at like...
But you look at all their instruments, none of them even, they're not even plugged in.
Yeah.
And then that was the Chili Peppers.
PRS or Fender or whatever. And they're like, representing. And I'm like, representing what? It's a piece of wood.
Representing an empty input jack.
Oh, man.
I guess the cable companies really aren't getting in on that. Well, like, Mogami. Mean, no Mogami's on that stage, man. Oh, Livewire, awesome. No. Not I, says the Super Bowl.
And you know what? We took Grammys from fucking Milli Vanilli for no reason.
It's true.
And it's so funny because, again, the technical side of it, you go, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Because I can put on this show, especially now that music's become more of a pageant than the music. So it's technically, you're like, oh, that's fucking genius. That means I don't,
about the show,
I don't have to worry about any of this. But it's like, yeah, but you should still, like the idea that now, I can't, for a while it was, we needed a voice. You need to have a good voice and be hot and we can make you into something, right? We'll write the music for you, we'll record. You don't even have to be able to sing anymore. You could just be hot.
There's auto-tune.
Done. Yeah. Done. I mean, we have like how many K-pop groups that all look, sound, and act exactly the same.
True.
I'm literally, they're like, these guys are Grammy of the Year or whatever. I'm like, what song? I've never heard it. I've never heard it. It's nuts.
Terrible.
That's like my daughter is like super big on this one dude now. He's playing See Here Now.
It's not Noah Kahan, is it?
Noah Kahan, yeah.
Well, I like
Noah Kahan. And I'm like, she's like, he's the best. I'm like, I've never fucking
you,
heard
you would
of him.
Really like him, though. He's. We saw him in
She played
in
some stuff. It's Ocean okay. City. Yeah.
I listened to the record because someone told me to. I mean, I think I was at the gym because that's where I get like new album because I have like an hour. And I was like, okay, I get it. It's cool. I get it. Saw him live. No auto-tune, no nothing. Four-piece band. And his songs are really, really, really well written. Huh. And they're not cliche the way I feel like the folk artist has become.
Yeah.
Like I would say much closer to like Mumford and Sons than like Philip Phillips.
Okay.
He's very good. I really like him.
Yeah, my daughter's like in love with him right now.
And I love that. That's a good sign that there's a revolution coming where we're going to go back to that kind of music.
So she's like, can we go to See Here Now? I'm like, absolutely not.
No.
Yeah, no.
No,
thank you.
No, nope, I'm okay.
$200 for a one-day ticket? Nope.
It's not even the money. We did Ocean's Calling, and we were stoked because, well, at first we were stoked because it was John Mayer, and Jack Johnson was on that bill. Another band that's literally just four-piece. Yeah. They don't even sound check. They just get up and jam, and it's awesome. But the next day, Sound on Sound dropped, and it was Hozier and John Mayer, and Monique was furious because she wants to see Hozier so bad.
Okay.
But the problem with Ocean's Calling and the problem with See Here Now, you have two towns that are not ready for something that big.
True.
See Here Now is, I mean, I had to break down a police barricade.
They're moving it this year too. It's farther down the beach. It's not even in, you know, center city.
It's just too, if you don't know Asbury Park, you don't know that the lights make no sense at all. there's nowhere to park. I'm not kidding. I played the Berkeley Hotel during See Here Now. And I had to break down a police barricade to get into the hotel.
Oh, shit.
I called my friend, the owner. I was like, hey, you know no one can get to your hotel right now? So there were guests just circling around because they'd put a police barricade up. And we're just like, what the hell? And then the time before, like, finding parking, it's insane. We were Ocean's Calling. Well,
parking's a shit show in that place, even without a festival.
Exactly. And they're just not ready for that many people. And Ocean's Calling was even worse. They had a bus service, but it was so packed. We ended up walking an hour there and an hour back because it was faster than waiting for the buses.
Wow.
And they just wasn't ready for it. Fuck, you know? Yeah, great musicians. The sound check, like, you could tell that the sound was kind of put to the side. They were like, just get them on stage. It'll be fine. Like, Alanis Morissette was playing, and she was phenomenal, but, like, a lot of really weird mix things.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, weather and whatnot, and you know, whoever's in at what time, they don't have the time to sound check. So they're just, like, bullshitting their way through it, and
you're sound checking through your first 2 to 3 songs.
Yeah, because you couldn't sound check in the morning. The festival starts at like noon, and then you can't do anything after because they have the noise ordinance at like 10 o'clock. Wow. So it's really just set up for failure in regards to actually making a good festival. But they get the money, so they're like, we don't really care.
That's all they give a fuck about.
They could put up cardboard cutouts of everybody at this point. I don't think anyone would care.
Yeah, you're right. God, I remember when what was it? MTV Spring Break was in Seaside. I mean, that thing was going 24/7, and whoever played, I forgot who by this point, but like, man, it didn't matter.
Nope. Just
fucking 12 o'clock, soundtrack, we don't care.
Yep.
It's like, fuck, that's awesome.
And it's, I think it's also like, and again, there's an audience that is a listening audience that wants to be part of the music. Then there's the audience that wants to take videos of themselves watching the show. They don't really care about the music. They just want to be able to say they were there.
That's what I said. That's a lot of people today. Yeah. They're not there for the music or for the band. No. They're there so they can tell somebody, I went to go see this band last night.
I watched four girls at a Coldplay concert the entire duration of the show. Not even with the stage behind them. They were the cameras facing them.
They watched the show through their phone.
No, they're taking videos of themselves. They're not taking video of the band. I get the band to an extent. Okay, yeah. But they're literally... We're having fun, girlies. They're not. They could be in a living room. You wouldn't know because you didn't actually see the band at any point. So it's like, why are you here?
It's like these people go to shows and they pay. Like some of them, they pay a lot of money to go, and they watch the whole show through their phone. Oh, it's like it's right fucking there.
Oh,
put the phone down
it
and watch the fucking show.
I want to remember it. That memory is going to be 50 times better than any shitty video you take on your phone.
Absolutely.
And don't get me wrong. I love. There's pages dedicated to like John Mayer solo, so you can go watch later as a guitar player and be like, oh, what was he doing? And I know that those people are the reason that that's there. But I'm like, for me, I take one picture that I'm like, I'm here, and it's usually before the show. and then I'm done. My phone's in my pocket. Because I'm like, I want to remember the show. I don't want to just look at it. I'm not going to look at that video later.
Nah.
Just sits there, and then you go, and you're like, oh, I'll delete that.
It's terrible. I remember that. Stupid.
It's like, I'm super fucking excited, but to actually go to Asbury Park, which is kind of strange. Going to see Baroness in
Nice.
Really, have you ever, you know, Gina Gleason?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, she's fucking phenomenal on the guitar, man. Phenomenal.
Huh.
I'll look it up. Yeah, very cool. If you like the heavier end of the spectrum, they're more of like a very experimental, like prog, almost like stoner, but psychedelic kind of guitar.
That sounds fun.
Her and John Baisley, I mean, their pedal boards would literally take up this entire table.
Oh, that's always fun.
They play like 40, 50 pedals each, and like all sorts of crazy soundscapes. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
Where at?
I'm going to see him at the Pony, in May.
Nice.
May 16th, something like that. And my daughter actually wanted to go with me. That was the best part.
Well, look at you.
All right?
Look at you.
I was like, It's about time.
Still hope. And you know, that's the thing too with that. Like my siblings, I'm the oldest of four. And I remember my sister started getting into some like, I was just like, no, I'm losing you to this dumb music. But now she got older and like, she still has a couple of them, but like my sister's into some pretty cool music and she's not like out hunting for anything new, but like, I'm like, I'm okay with what you're listening to right now. Like you put on the radio and I'm like, I don't want to like jump out of the car, you know? And my other sister is more into like the heavy rock kind of stuff. And my brother is kind of all over the spectrum. So I'm like, cool. Like I have siblings that are not just obsessed with like, to me, any obsession with one artist is a big mistake. It's like, you're just like, well, if it's not Taylor Swift, I don't care. And it's like,
yeah, but there's, you always have that one that you have the better connection with than anything.
But don't lock yourself in a room with it. But hang out with other people.
As a musician though, like you were saying, it's just like, okay, well, what inspired him, and then you backtrack with it.
But you have to have the mindset for that, though. I think you have to go into it. I think I had a teacher that said that they were like, take your heroes and then look at their heroes.
Yeah,
and it's hard. Like it is. Like going through listening to a John Mayer record, which is beautifully recorded. You can go all the way back to like Muddy Waters from that lineage, right? And it's like, have you tried listening to a Muddy Waters? I mean, it's a very specific sound. It did one thing really, really well. But for like a 12-year-old, I remember someone handed me Soul to Soul when I was 12 because my teacher was like, you don't know John Mayer if you don't know these people. And I'm listening and I'm 12 and I'm like, well, this isn't John Mayer. Now I'm 28 and I freaking love that stuff. Exactly. You know, like,
28, you're a baby.
I know.
Yeah.
I was 20 years older.
Well, it's like my son, when he was little, used to rock out to everything with me. And then he got to be a teenager and he went and like only listened to rap. And I was like, I failed. But like we were just talking about this Baroness show, and he's like, "Yeah, I guess I'll come." But you know, if the Deftones play around here, I'm in. I'll go with you. And I was like, "Thank God, something has sunk."
Small wins. Just take those small wins.
It's this funny thing too with and I think it's always been around. It's this need for identity, especially with music. Well, I'm the kind of person that listens to this. Well, I went to this year. I went to Megadeth. Don't know any Megadeth songs. My buddy got me tickets and I was like, fuck yeah, I'll go see Megadeth. Went and saw Tool.
Tool's great.
They were fucking awesome.
They put on a show.
Oh, they do, dude. It was nuts. I was at the Megadeth show and I ran into this chick that I know from like the Asbury scene. And she's like, what the hell are you doing here? She knows me as the guy in the Grateful Dead band. And I'm like, just because I play in a dead band doesn't mean I don't listen to other music. Like, check out my phone. I got hip hop on there. And it's not like I hate the term, I listen to a little bit of everything. No. I listen to everything. Like I intently listen to blank, blank, blank. Like if you said, what are your favorite rappers? I could tell you who they are. What are your favorite metal bands? I could tell you who they are and all the records that I like. Yeah. Not just like, oh yeah, I put on Pandora and these songs come on. Yeah,
the only thing I don't willingly listen to really is country. That's it.
I'll only listen to like old country, like good country.
Like it's pop music today.
There's, it's pop music. It's not
Southern pop music. It's not country anymore.
Yeah, everything goes through its changes, I guess.
Yeah.
But everything's getting closer to a formula that we figured out. And so we just go, like country music kind of turned into what pop was, where they're like, okay, so we can make this trap beat in Logic, put a bass line on it, have them kind of mumble words, and as long as it has some kind of hook in the middle, it's sellable. Done, get out. And that's why, like, I think Ariana Grande went from like releasing an album every couple of years to like album, because they're like, oh, we can do this whole thing from a laptop at an airport.
Yeah,
have her sing on it and call it a day. Yeah. You know, it's,
she doesn't even have to be here.
No, no, and she's an amazing singer. But it's like, I remember Dangerous Woman came out and I was in love with that record. It was so well done. Every song was just gorgeous. And then like you start hearing the and then she's going like don't know what she's saying. There's no melody. It's just kind of her talking over the song. And I'm like, you could do so much better. I know.
It's sold. That's the problem.
I know. It's down to art or is it down to business? And it's intention. If your goal is just to make as much money as possible, that's the way.
So, okay. You seem passionate. I'd like to know your thoughts on this.
I'm curious.
AI music.
I like AI almost in anything but music. I think that, I guess it would be, depend on the context. I think that music is something that it's not tedious enough in its creation to warrant having an AI do it for you, if that makes sense. So like I'm a big gamer. Video games, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to sit here and do textures on this stupid map for 6 months. Yeah. Why not have the AI do it? That's not going to change the art of the game, you know? But with music, it's like, what am I going to do? Have them do the guitar tracks for me? It's like, well, then why am I here? Well,
I was three people that do it.
I brought it up a couple months ago, but I think it was probably like December. I was reading an article. In 2023, there was a guy in like an 8 or 9 month span put out, and he has in his musical catalog out there like 800 something songs released in 8 or 9 months, completely 100% written and generated, produced, mixed, and produced everything. By AI.
And I bet they're great.
He's making tons of money on it. And he put out 800 songs in like 9 months.
I mean, it's... And again, though... It's
a tool. It's a tool for a businessman.
It's a tool for a businessman. Exactly. So it's like if your goal... And I think that this is where a change has to come in the market because we're getting so close to that line. It's going to have to break at some point or we're just not listening to music anymore.
But at that point, you're getting it's so oversaturated from something like that. That real music that's made by real human beings just can't cut through.
And it's where faith in humanity has to come in, where you have to go, there is still an audience of people. I mean, I see it when I go to these jam things. And I'm like, there is still an audience of people that pay money to go see a band play music. Or they pay money for a record from an artist that they know created this from scratch. And you know damn well that those... I mean, think about pop music now. It's like all those pop songs are written by a bunch of guys in suits going, what words and phrases work here so that we can sell? Country is a perfect example. Yeah. I think Bo Burnham did like a country... It was like a spoof of a country song talking about pandering. That was the whole joke. Okay. And you're listening and you're like, this sounds like a Luke Bryan song. Like this sounds, he starts the song and you're like, he's literally writing what they're writing right now. And everyone's laughing. And I'm like, this isn't a joke. This is what we're doing right now. Like, this is it.
This is real.
But I think for every one of those, there's a Chris Stapleton or there's, I'm trying to think of another country one. It's really hard. I think that's about it. He's like the only one I can think of that's like really good country artist right now. But like, you listen to that track and you're like, someone sat down and played that guitar part. Yeah. Someone wrote those lyrics. They had a reason for why they were writing those lyrics. And you feel it. There's a big difference.
That Baroness show I'm going to is another prime example of what's fighting live music these days. Is I drove all the way up to Asbury Park to buy the tickets at the Stone Pony box office because there was $20 in fees per ticket.
Yep.
Per ticket. The tickets were only $28.
Yep.
And there was $20 in fees for every fucking ticket.
Yep.
I bought four of them, so driving to Asbury saved me $80 in fees.
Because again, it's all comes down money versus time. Yeah. So most people are going, I'd rather give you the money than have to take the time.
Go anywhere. I literally was when you're saying that in my head, I'd be like, I don't know, man. I probably just wait for it to come in the mail. You know what I mean? No, like
it's an extra $80, man. It was a half hour drive.
Yeah. And it's all intention. What do you want? Do you want to do that? Like we do the because we've done the ones with all the fees and stuff, and a lot of them, unfortunately, you don't have an option anymore.
Oh yeah,
like you can't go to the box office. But it's getting
insane at this point. Yeah, it's not even a huge show, and it's $20 per ticket.
You don't even have to limit that to music. I mean, like if you look at pretty much anything now, we found ways to. I remember trying to get a PS5 during COVID time, and it was like they were just gone because everybody was scalping them. And there's bots buying tickets, and there's bots buying technology. And
well, it's like Walmart just announced that they're going to start charging you to use self checkout.
Yep. I saw that.
Wait, what?
Walmart just announced people they're going to start charging you to use the self-checkout.
People are scanning other items. So like someone will scan like an Apple and then walk out with a TV. And because the people at the door that are supposed to be checking aren't, they're like, well, we're going to charge a subscription so that you have to subscribe to be able to use self-checkout, which you want to be mad at them, but you're like, or just keep losing TVs. I don't know. Like, yeah.
Holy it's shit. Not Walmart's not really hurting. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Walmart's not hurting, but you know,
other places are. I could see that.
It's weird. I mean, I think the self checkout thing is. It's just nuts to see how far. I remember when that first like became a thing.
Oh yeah.
And now it's like
people are furious.
Oh yeah. It's just like
they're like, no, that I'm supposed to just not take that job. You're not supposed to take it away from me.
I want to bitch about the lady behind the register. That's fucking miserable.
I need somebody to make myself feel better as I check out.
Oh, man. Today at Target, they had it shut down for a second, the self-checkout. And then you just see these lines. And they're always like, self-checkout, we've got lanes. I'm like, you have one lane with one person who can only see out of one eye, and you got 50 people in line. Like, what am I supposed to do? There's times I just see that. I'm like, I don't need whatever it is I have here.
Leaving. Like, and you had all those registers that used to be filled. And now it used to be all the time. One fucking person.
One person. And that is the, I think I was in the self-checkout, and I had a, more than 10 items. I was a cashier at Aldi, so I am, and I hate going to stores, so I am a ninja. I will get out of there. So that, and I heard some lady, she was like, oh, 10 items. Didn't say it to me, just said it behind my back. And I literally was in and out in the time it took her to say that. And I was like, bitch, like,
wow.
Maybe focus on you and then we'll be okay. Like,
people just want something to complain about.
Especially, yeah, you get a lot of old folks around here that just want to be mad about something. If you're
in self-checkout, why are they limiting it to how many fucking items?
Because you get, and again, at Aldi, I remember seeing this, you get the little grandma with this huge cart of like 50 things and she's taking up all this space and she's sitting there for 40 minutes. Because the whole idea is it's express. It's not supposed to be, and you don't have the space for that much, which... I'm one dude. I have a girlfriend and a cat. This is not like I'm shopping for eight, you know? I remember when I was working at Aldi, because we had to clean carts and all this stuff. It was during COVID. Because that's the, with being a musician, it's like I get to pick the easy job that pays really well. But then when the world goes to shit, everyone else gets unemployment. And I'm like, well, I have to go get a big boy job.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was my path. I chose it. I'm not mad about it. But this lady comes in. She's tiny, like 4 feet tall. And she's got this Staples shopping cart. I'm at Aldi, not at Staples. She's a Staples shopping cart. It is overflowing. Like, I'm surprised. I want to see the footage of how she got things into that basket over time. And she comes up and she literally looks at me and goes, let me know when I get to $100. Okay. I'm scanning items. You're at 100. Let me know when it gets to 150. And I had to do, and normally we put another cart because we can like go through faster. They're like, that's not our cart, so we can't do that. It has to go back in that cart. So I had to wait for her to put everything up. I had to scan each item. It was insane. Oh, and that's the problem with self-checkout. If you have someone like that, their cart's usually perpendicular to the thing. They're blocking the whole operation just
going
goes
up
south.
The whole works.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's fucking awesome.
I love how this music conversation just got into grocery store.
Oh, we go on tangents all the time. It's fine.
We could talk about building houses, whatever. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing a fucking car.
Dude.
He ends up talking about golf all the time, so you're good. You're fine.
I know nothing about golf. Golf is a sport that I know I cannot get into because it would devour my life. I love little changes to improve. Okay. So that's why I love like pool or bowling. Like I love that. And I also love gear. So I would spend a lot of money because I'd be like, well, this one does a little better than that. I'll sell this
sounds
one.
Sounds like you're
one.
Primed to be a golfer.
No.
And 20 years. Less than 20 years.
It is a humbling
and that's
thing
where
to
I
try to
live. And knowing that it's no one's fault but your own. I can't blame anybody for my shitty play.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like I look at it like, okay, so I didn't start until like, what, 42 or something like that. It's like, to me, I love recording drums. Because they're very, you can't manage that. You can't tame.
Right. It's always the drums. Always
something. Yeah. So it's like the same thing. It's just like, well, I got to fucking hit this ball just right.
Yep.
Yeah. You can go up and hit the best shot of your life and follow it up with the absolute fucking worst shot of your
life. And it's no one's fault but yours. Yeah. Yes. I was a military brat, so I moved around a lot. So team sports were just never a thing for me. And so like anything I do, like I'm getting back into rock climbing now. Like that's, I love that because it's like, maybe your partner, so you don't die. But like other than that, it's on you. You know,
so you don't die.
So don't die.
Yeah, which my partner is also
my girlfriend.
You got
that rope?
So.
You got it right. All right, cool. It's zip tied onto something, right? Oh God.
We had to do all the bullet because my girlfriend and I both because I'm from Colorado and I actually took class in high school and everything, and she climbed all over the country, like trad climbing and shit.
Oh shit.
And they're like, oh, well, you have to take our belay test. And we're like, we know how to belay. And they're like, well, you have to do this. And there's a thing that they have you do. So you tie what's called a double figure eight knot, which is the minute I put on the harness and did, I was like, oh, I don't remember how to do this. And then there's this thing that if you watch the YouTube video, it's called a stopper knot, where if you have extra rope, you tie this little thing. And any good climber will say, if you have to tie a stopper knot, which is a useless knot, by the way, you're doing it wrong. And at this place, it is the rule that you must have your tail long enough. And so we're literally standing in front of this fucking 18-year-old kid just trying to tell me that. I'm like, dude, you know this is ridiculous, right? We call it a redundancy knot. Because the guy's like, if this other knot goes, this isn't going to help you. It's just there for some reason.
Yeah. Maybe that'll work.
It won't. It will. Wow. Like, he was like, not maybe. It will not work. It is completely useless. Yeah. It's funny the things that we just do because we're told to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
So I think we're going to have to get back to that whole, remember when we were talking about trying to bring a bunch of people in here?
Okay.
And make some music with a bunch of different people?
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to try to make that happen this summer. And I think we need to get him involved too.
Okay.
My plan is just take like four or five different musicians that have never met each other before, throw them in that room and say, write a song. You got 3 hours.
Oh, you wouldn't want me in there.
No, just to see what happens.
I am
like drummer from this band, you know, singer from that band, guitar player from this band.
It would have to be just a band format. Because I moved around. I do not play well with others. My girlfriend is a writer and has wanted to write a song with me now for the last 3 years that we've been together.
And you're still living.
And I'm just like, babe, you don't understand. My brain does not work that way. I'll work with a band. I'll you know, we'll be jamming and I'll write something. But like if I'm with like another, perfect example, I was when I went to college, they had a co-writing class. Because when you go to music college, everybody wants to, they're like, bro, we got to write sometime. Like, I swear to God, the amount of people. And I'm like, you don't want to write. You don't even know me. And you're just assuming that we're going to be good. Like, because now that co-write thing is such a big deal. And they split us into groups of three. One person was the player, which was me, because I was the only one that played an instrument. The lyrics and the melody. And I sat down at the piano and I was like, oh, this is a cool progression. And then I started humming something. I was like, oh, that's a cool melody. And then I started coming up with words. And I was like, oh, those are cool words. And the other two people were just like, oh, okay. Because I just was already thinking of all these things. And I feel like an asshole, but I'm like, clearly you're not thinking of anything. And I think I've only written songs with like one person and I have no idea where she is. So it would be interesting.
Yeah, I've been talking about doing this for a long time, but I finally want to just, you know, say, fuck it. Let's
I mean, it'd be interesting.
Just to see if it works. Just to see what happens.
You have to have some good players.
Yeah, get some good players from all different types of, you know, different genres and types of music and just...
It could end in a beautiful song or a fist fight.
So, yeah, see what the melting pot brings. Yeah.
All right, so if it's a fist fight, we're not doing it here.
But if it's a fist fight and we get it on video, it's still going to be
good. It's going to go on. It's going to be good content either way. It'll be great.
Either way.
I know, but I don't want to fix anything.
You just tell them don't break anything except each other.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I think that if it was set up like a band where you didn't have a whole bunch of alphas trying to figure things out, it'd probably work. Because like what I've learned about, you know, dealing with bands, bass player, drummer, usually they're kind of go with the flow. They're like, I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah.
They just worry about being in sync with each other.
Exactly. Yeah. Like anytime you ask the drummer, what would you do on this track? He goes, I don't know. What's the bass player doing? And every time you ask the bass player, he's like, what's the kick drum doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they're good, if they're not good, they're just like, oh, I do this. I'm like, you're not good. You don't know what you're doing. But the problem would be if you got like two singer songwriters with very large heads, you know, where, well, this is what I would do. This is what I would do. Or if everyone's too nice and they're just like, oh, whatever you think, man, it'll be fine. You know, maybe a country song. I don't know. You know those conversations.
That's why we haven't done this yet. Because he wants to do it.
We gotta get five alphas and just throw them in there and just tape the whole thing. It'll be gold.
What was that fucking show, Celebrity Deathmatch?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when he was talking about that. I was like, that could be just studio deathmatch. It goes to the national level where they have like Mick Jagger fighting with Paul McCartney or something, and you're like,
we're on to something here.
I mean. I don't think they'd sign off on it, but and we don't want to break either of them. But
true.
I'm reading Keith Richards' memoirs right now, and I'm like, that guy is so damn old. Like, I think he actually is Satan. Keith Richards is the devil. That's why he's still alive.
You know, he gets oil changes, right?
What's that?
He gets oil changes.
I've heard about that.
Oh, yeah. All those old heroin addicts did.
Yeah.
So it's clapping. Yeah,
he's just siphon his blood out and give him new blood. Here you go, pal.
Jesus, man.
Yeah.
He's like a vampire. He's a modern day vampire.
Maybe that's how you longevity.
Where we're going. That's where we're headed now.
Dennis Leary, he's like, we can't do any more drugs. Keith Richards did them all. He's like, we got to wait till he dies and smoke his ashes.
That only lasts so long.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, We got to thank our sponsors, Manifarka Brewery, Sapper Township, Lofadelic Records, Main Street in Belmore, TrueNewJersey.com, discount code in the description. And our final question for you. If there's one singular thing you could change about the local music scene, what would it be and why? One singular thing.
And this is
that you think would benefit the music scene the most.
This is going to seem really weird because it's a physical thing. Okay. And I've seen it in other places and it's great. Stages.
Wow.
Stages. Maybe not so much in Asbury because Asbury already kind of does that. When you walk into a bar and there's some guy in the corner with a guitar, you're not paying attention to that guy. That guy is just...
When he's playing on a 3-inch riser with some plywood, yeah.
Even a 3-inch riser with some plywood implies that there is a person that is going to stand there and they are going to be the center of attention. I'm not going to name any places, but I played places... I have a rug that I put out when I play. I have a big rug. All my stuff fits on the rug. This is my rug. Don't stand on my fucking rug. Simple as that. Yeah. And I watch a guy. I'm playing my song. Walk right up, stand on my rug. He's holding his drink, just like... What? What do you mean, what? You're on my goddamn rug, dude. Like, have a little bit of respect. I think that there's a sacred thing that the stage has. That, like, even that little riser, even that little 6 inches. No, you don't put a table there. That's where the musician sets up. And I've seen it. I've played places. I've been to New Orleans where they have a stage. Yeah. And everyone's on that stage. And everyone is like, oh, well, the stage is the center of attention. Not the guy standing in the corner where the waiters and waitresses are coming out of the door. Like, there's places I refuse to play now because
also
I'm
the
like,
guy standing on the corner that's on the floor, he's the same height as everybody. Yeah. So the guy in the back, you can't see over everybody to even see what he's doing.
And again, it's intention. So if you're a bar that you're just like, I need this to be like a guy playing the harp, you know, no one's really paying attention, cool. But like, if you are advertising yourself as a bar with live music, that's the thing. You have a bar, right? We don't have the... Imagine if the bar didn't exist and it was just a bunch of guys holding alcohol and they're just like, here, no one would go to the bar. That's why the bar is cool, you know? And I think that if we did that on LBI, which we have certain places that do, it would make the music so much more important than it is. It was not an afterthought.
Yeah, like Bird and Betty's has a nice stage.
Bird and Betty's has a nice stage. But like if you go to like... Buckaloo's has a killer audience. And I think that if they set up a stage and they were like, this is a bar that does music, it would become more important than it is now. It's not, I feel like most of the bars on the island, it's like an afterthought. They were like, oh, and we could have music.
As someone involved in an engineering aspect of Long Beach Island, they only care about how many seats they can put on the
floor. Of course they do. Yeah. And again, attention.
Putting a stage takes, you know, 8 seats away. But it's like 8 people that can't sit down.
You know, people talk about Asbury Park with this reverence because they're like, well, it's where the music was, man. It's like, yeah, because you buy tickets to go to the Pony.
Keyword was.
Yeah, but even then, you go to those venues to see those bands. It's not, you're not like, oh, we'll have dinner and maybe there'll be a musician and a monkey dancing around. I don't know. Like, and it's really like that mindset that I really, in my local music scene, I wish that.
Well, I mean, that has changed a little bit now with all the restaurants in Asbury. So, like, people are going, like, oh, let's go out to dinner. And, well, all right, this person's playing. I don't know, but we're already out here. Let's just go check it out.
Yeah.
And it is backfired a little
bit. But even the ones that I've played, okay, maybe not the, like, the Asbury Hotel doesn't have a stage, but they have a full setup. So, like, when you go to the Asbury Hotel, there's music there. That's why you're there. The Berkeley Hotel, back when I played it, had a small stage in the corner. That was where the musician played. You know, you didn't have to worry about, oh, well, we're going to have to move the table, so you're going to have to go sit at the bar for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And it made music a little bit more the focus than, say, Mainland would be one that I would put out, where I'm like, they literally shove you right where the waiters and waitresses are trying to get in. You have people standing on your shit. You're getting told to turn down, and then people get loud, and then you can't even, you wouldn't even know there was music there in the first place.
Oh, wow. Wait, so we turned down as an acoustic singer?
Dude. Seriously. Wow. They're like, this one couple complained that it was too loud. I'm like, yeah, but you understand now that the rules of sound, if everyone else is getting louder, then you're not going to hear the music. Now you're paying me however much money to basically be useless. So I don't know. That's a dumb little, because I know I could have some huge philosophical idea, but course, I think that that is something that it just reestablishes that musicians are not, I am not a topiary. I am not a fire pit. I'm a person with an expertise, something that I've spent a lot of time being good at. I would like to be treated as such. And I think that all musicians should.
That's a good answer. It's, yeah. It's,
I like it.
different. We've had nothing like that.
Hashtag stages.
Do it, build it. If you build it, they will come. Build it, so, they will come.
Anywhere you want people to find you on, you know, Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, ty.mayers and Ty Mayers Music on Facebook. And you can just search my name and Spotify and all that stuff comes up. Hopefully the new single will be dropping in like May or June. Okay. So
yeah, it should be out right around May, somewhere in there.
Perfect.
Oh, so yeah, yeah. It's coming up in a couple days, you know.
Time jump.
That'd be perfect because I think we're doing the big show for that. We're going to play Bird and Betty's in May and sharing the stage with Shallow Green, which would be cool. And I think we might drop the single that night. Okay. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, maybe I'll come out and take some video for you guys.
Yeah, man.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We really appreciate it, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. See, you remembered. I'm so proud of you.
I know, I tried.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Riding, holding on to something. I am trying not to lose my head. Still breathing. Girl, this is something real. Tell me how you feel. Or I won't just keep holding on. So let me know. It's time to let it go. I can see the way you look at me, but it ain't the same. But I'm still breathing. I'm still breathing.